I'm all right. Grace, brothers and sisters, is something that changes everything. Grace changes everything. In the book, or in the musical Les Mis, right, it's the grace of a priest that is offered to a runaway convict named Jean Valjean that totally turns his life around, that reorients his life and shatters his heart of stone and turns it into a heart of love. It's that grace that changes everything. In the year 1517, a monk by the name of Martin Luther was spending his time feeling completely burdened under the law of God. He had this sense of guilt and this sense of shame that he continually lived his life through until he reread the book of Romans. And there he heard of the righteousness of God that wasn't something that he did, but a righteousness of God that was given to him. And grace changed everything for Martin Luther. A husband and a wife are struggling, right, in their life. There is ice in the air. There's tension in the home. Grace changes everything. A child, once again, finds themselves being sent to the principal's office and is waiting for their father to come pick them up for the umpteenth time, right? It's grace that's going to change everything. A religious prophet is running away from God, determined that his happiness is going to be found in something other than him. And this morning I want to invite you to turn in your Bibles to Jonah chapter 2, where we're going to see how grace changes everything for this prophet. So let's turn in our Bibles to Jonah chapter 2 in order that we can see the grace of the Lord. So that's Jonah chapter 2, and we're actually going to read from verse 1. And we're going to go all the way through chapter 3, verse 3 this morning. So that's Jonah chapter 2. We're going to look at verse 1, and we're going to read it all the way through till chapter 3, verse 3, as we continue throughout this book. So there that we read these words. It says, "Then Jonah prayed to the Lord his God from the belly of the fish, saying, 'I called out to the Lord out of my distress, and he answered me. Out of the belly of Sheol I cried, and you, God, heard my voice. For you cast me into the deep, into the heart of the sea, and the flood surrounded me. All your waves and your billows passed over me. And then I said, I am driven away from your sight, yet I shall again look upon your holy temple. The waters closed in over me to take my life. The deep surrounded me. Weeds were wrapped around my head. And at the root of the mountains, I went down to the land whose bars closed in upon me forever. Yet you brought up my life from the pit, O Lord my God. When my life was fainting away, I remembered the Lord in prayer, and my prayer came to you into your holy temple. Those who pay regard to vain idols forsake their hope of steadfast love. But I, with thanksgiving, will sacrifice to you what I have vowed will do for you. Salvation belongs to the Lord.' And the Lord spoke to the fish, and it vomited Jonah out upon the dry land. Then the word of the Lord came to Jonah the second time, saying, 'Arise, go to Nineveh, that great city, and call out against it. Call out against it the message that I tell you.' So Jonah arose and went to Nineveh according to the word of the Lord." Brothers and sisters, this is the word of the Lord. Amen. This morning, in our text, what Jonah does in his prayer is he teaches us all about grace. He teaches us about grace, and he teaches us three things about it. First, we're going to see that Jonah teaches us about the root of grace. So we learn what grace actually is, and that's where we're going to spend the majority of our time this morning. Then second, what we see in our text, and Jonah teaches us, he teaches us the reception of grace, or he teaches us how it is we actually receive grace, or more pointedly, what it is that blocks us from receiving the grace of God, okay? And then finally, we're going to see the results of grace, or what happens when grace moves from a mere concept that you have to something that profoundly you taste and you see upon the soul and pond deep within who you are. All right, so that's the order we're going to see. Jonah teaches us about the root of grace, what it is, the reception, how we get it, or how it's blocked from us, and then finally the result, what happens to us. So let's dive in. The root of grace. What is grace? In this text, what we're going to see is we're going to see grace defined as such, okay? So if I were to define grace, I would say it's this, that grace is favor that is freely given to an undeserving recipient by a non-obligated giver at great cost to themselves. So if somebody ever asked you, what is grace? You can tell them, grace is favor that is freely given to an undeserving recipient by a non-obligated giver at great cost to themselves. And the cool thing about our text this morning is what we're going to see is Jonah's prayer captures all of these various elements of what grace actually is. So let's just dive in and see that. Starting with grace is favor, okay? Our text begins with Jonah struggling, right? He's struggling. He's falling apart. And in verse 1, it says this. It says, then Jonah prayed to the Lord, his God, from the belly of the fish, saying, I called out to the Lord out of my distress, and he answered me. Out of the belly of Sheol I cried, and you heard my voice. Jonah, in other words, cries out to God, and what he does is he sees God turn his face towards him. He tastes the first piece of grace, which is he experiences the favorable look of God. He experiences the favor of God hearing his voice. So what do I mean by favor, right? When we say grace is favor. Well, to be favored means that you have intimate access. When someone looks upon you favorably, what it means is that they've let you in, that you're no longer an outsider. When somebody gives you favor, it means they're ready to hear from you when you call. They look upon you now with admiration and delight. Grace is favor, and to be favored is to be let in. It's to be given access. And let's be honest, that's something that you and I all want. Because think about it, right? To be left without favor would be one of our greatest nightmares. To be left standing alone at recess, not picked by your classmates to play upon their team, it's a great nightmare. To experience someone in school passing around invitations only to notice that they're not giving you an invitation, right? That's a great nightmare. To propose to the person who you think is the love of your life and then to have them meet you with unrequited love, that is the greatest nightmare. To not receive favor, to not be let in, is something that terrifies us. However, at the same time, when you get favor, when you are let in, that is when you experience the greatest delight and the greatest joy. I mean, think about this. A good example of this comes from Sally Fields, all right? Sally Fields was somebody who adored the Hollywood stars. She dreamed of being a great actor one day and accepted into the inner ring of Hollywood elites. Now, think about this. One day, when she was up for an Oscar for her role in the movie Places from the Heart, upon hearing her name called, what Sally Fields did is she burst onto stage, she grabbed the microphone, and with the biggest smile on her face for winning this Oscar, she said this. She goes, but I want to say thank you to you. She's talking to Hollywood. She goes, I haven't had an orthodox career, and I've wanted more than anything to have your respect. She goes, the first time I didn't feel it, but this time I feel it. And I can't deny the fact that you like me. Right now, you like me. Thank you. You probably think of it as you really, really like me, right? You see, when she got that Oscar, she experienced favor. She experienced being looked upon with acceptance and delight. She was let in. And what happened is it filled her with the greatest joy. She was brought into the inner circle that she adored. And that's what you and I want. You and I, more than anything else, we want to be met with love. We want to know in our inner being that we are liked, that we are really, really liked. And here's the thing. I'm pretty sure for the most of you sitting here this morning, you are able to insinuate, you know that while you seek favor in all different areas of your life, you seek favor from your spouse, you seek favor from your parents and your boss or your classmates, you're always going out seeking favor. I'm pretty sure by this point in your life that you've come to the realization that finding favor in all those various things in your life, that they have not settled your soul, that they have not brought you the peace that you've been looking for in your life. And why is that? Well, it's because the thing that you weren't ultimately made for those things. You were made for God. And you have to understand that it's only His favor coming upon you. It's only being led into His presence that's going to be the thing that seals your soul. It's the smile of God that you've been looking for in all of your achievements, right? It's the kiss, we've said, from the face of God that you have been looking for in all your romantic relationships. It's the word of approval from the face of God that you're looking for or have been looking for all these years from your parents. What it is you're looking in your life for the gaze of God's eyes to come down upon you. That is what your soul yearns for. That's what you want. That's what will put your soul to rest. C.S. Lewis in The Weight of Glory says it like this. He says, you long to be acknowledged. You long to bridge some chasm that yawns. You long to be the delight of God, to be accepted by Him, to be acknowledged by Him, and welcome into the heart of things. And C.S. Lewis says, the door on which you have been knocking all of your life has been opened at last. And that opening of that door, that being let in, that favorable glance from God coming upon you, that is grace. That is what grace is. Grace is the Lord coming and letting you into Himself, into the inner circle, into His glorious presence, the very thing that stills your soul. Jonah is sinking into the abyss. He calls out to the Lord, out of my distress. And the Lord answered, out of the belly of Sheol, I cried, Jonah says, and God heard his voice. Jonah calls and God opens the door. And Jonah hears God saying, yes, my son. And you can imagine that Jonah, as he feels in the deepest recesses of his soul, the thing he's been longing for, he likes me. God really, really likes me. Grace at first is favor. Grace is favor. It's being let in. Do you know the experience of being let in by God? Do you know the smile of God? Do you live your life under the smile of God gazing down upon you? Have you experienced what it is to rest in the delight of the Lord? Have you experienced what it is to be fully accepted by Him? Have you experienced grace? Do you know, C.S. Lewis again says, he says, do you know what it means to please God, to be a real ingredient in divine happiness, to be loved by God, not merely pitied, but delighted in as an artist delights in his work or as a father in his son? And C.S. Lewis goes on. He goes, I know that seems impossible, a weight or burden of glory which your heart can hardly sustain, but in or with Christ, he's saying, it is so. Grace is favor. Grace is first and foremost being let into the presence of God. That's the first thing Jonah shows us. But that's not all what grace is. Not only is grace favor, grace is being let in. But second, what grace is grace is favor that is freely given to an undeserving recipient, okay? Look in our text. Look at Jonah speak to this. In verse 5, he says, the waters closed in over me to take my life. The deep surrounded me. Weeds were wrapped around my head. At the roots of the mountains, I went down to the land whose bars closed upon me forever. Yet you brought me up. You brought my life up from the pit, O Lord my God. And then in verse 8, he calls out and he says, those who pay regard to vain idols, man, they forsake their hope of steadfast love. Here we see in verse 5 and 8 that Jonah's calling out to God and he's recognizing that the favor now, the access that he has to God, which God has given him, is something that he doesn't deserve in the least bit. Jonah knows that he is an idolater. Jonah knows that he walked away from the Lord, that he jumped on a ship to bring him to something that he thought was going to be his ultimate happiness rather than God. And in doing so, Jonah knows that he forsook God. He realizes that God has the full right now to forsake him. But experiencing that favor, Jonah sits there and he realizes that he's the undeserved recipient of that grace. Grace is favor. It's being let in. But it's being let in by someone who freely gives it to somebody who does not deserve it. Somebody who understood this aspect of grace, that grace isn't just favor, but it's favor given to an undeserved recipient, was somebody by the name of Fyodor Dostoevsky, okay? Now, Dostoevsky, he was a great Russian writer in the 1800s, and if you walk around Bellingham, you might find him around there at one point, but it was a hipster joke. It's okay. It's all right. Don't worry. Just let it go. It's fine. Anyways, Dostoevsky in his book, Crime and Punishment, all right, he has this great scene that points to this reality of grace as being given to those who don't deserve it. And in this scene, there's two characters. There's a guy named Marmalev Dov, okay, who is kind of this train wreck of a guy, and he's talking in a pub to Raskolnikov, okay? And this is what Marmeladov says to Raskolnikov. He's talking about his life and how it's falling apart. And he goes like this. He goes, do you suppose that this pint that I'm drinking, he says, has been sweet to me? Marmeladov says, it's been tribulation that I sought at the bottom of it. Tears and tribulation, and I've found it and I've tasted it. He's talking about how much of a wreck his life is. But he says, but God, he will have grace. He goes, God will come on judgment day, and he will first ask, Marmeladov, where is your daughter? Where is your daughter who bore her thorn, who gave up herself? Where is your daughter who offered love to you, you filthy drunkard, her earthly father, to you who is and she was undismayed by your beastliness? Where is she? And God will say to her, Sophia, come to me. He'll say, come to me, I've already forgiven you once. There are many sins that I have forgiven you for, but you have loved much. And Marmeladov says, and when that happens, he will embrace my Sonya, and he will forgive, for I know it. I felt it in my soul when I was with her just now. But then he goes, but when God is done judging all those people who have done such good things, then he will summon us, saying, you too come forth. Come forth, ye drunkards. Come forth, ye weak ones. Come forth, ye children of shame. And we shall all come forth and stand before him. And he will say to us, ye are sinners, but come to me also. And I tell you, Raskolnikov, the wise one and the understanding will say, O Lord, why dost thou receive these deplorable sinners? And he will say, this is why I receive them, O wise ones. This is why I receive them, O ye of understanding. I received them because not one of them believed himself to be worthy of being received. And then the Lord shall hold out his crucified hands and to us, and we shall fall down before him, and we shall weep. Lord, thy kingdom come. To know grace, brothers and sisters, is to know it as amazing grace. Not obvious grace. Not clearly I deserve this grace. It's to receive it as amazing grace. For grace is not only favor, it's not only given access to God, but it's favor which is freely given to those who are undeserving. And he will say to those who are the religious ones who have all understanding, why do you receive them? I receive them because not one of them believed they were worthy of ever being received. Grace is favor given freely to undeserving recipients. That's not all. Not only is it free, we've learned, not only is it freely given to undeserved recipients, we've seen from Jonah, but there's a third aspect, and it's this, that grace is a favor freely given to undeserving recipients by a non-obligated giver. And let me tell you, you will never understand what grace is until you get this point. Let's go to Jonah. Jonah in verse 8 and 9. What does he say? He says, those who pay regard to vain idols forsake their hope of their steadfast love. But I, with the voice of thanksgiving, will sacrifice to you what I vowed I will pay. He's saying, I will do. And then he says, salvation belongs to the Lord. Salvation, Jonah says, belongs to God. If you want to experience grace and know the changing power, the life-changing power of grace, you must see that grace is favor that's freely bestowed upon you, but it's favor which God is not the slightest bit obligated to give to you. God owes you nothing. Jonah realizes that if God had have let him jump off the boat, and then if he had just sunk to the bottom, and that would have been the end of him and Sheol, he understands that God would have received glory because God would have been just. He would have received glory because God would have proved himself just. Jonah forsakes God. He walks away from God. He says, the end of you, God, I want nothing to do with you. I want my happiness to be found over here. And it would have been just for God to say, fine, and let Jonah experience the very end of that. It would have brought glory to him to show himself just like that. And so you got to understand this about grace. God does not owe grace. He is not obliged to give grace. I mean, so many of us Christians walk around our lives thinking to ourselves, man, I know I'm a sinner, I know I'm undeserving, but nonetheless, we're not radically changed by the grace of God. And why is that? I think one reason deep down is that we're certain that God has to give it to us anyways. That God's obliged to pour out his grace and mercy upon us. But salvation belongs to God. It is his. Meaning that God is under no obligation to pour out grace. He's under no obligation to send Son into the world. Jesus was under no obligation to give his life for you. And if you think, yes, I'm an undeserving sinner, but God is obliged to give me grace, so he had to send his Son, if that's you, you'll never be changed by the radical nature of grace. You have to see that God gave up his love for you, not because he had to, but rather because before the foundations of the world, when he looked upon you in his sovereign will, he decided to pour out his favor upon you. Grace is favor. It's letting in that's freely given to an undeserving recipient by someone who is by no means obligated to give it. Now, I hope you're starting to understand what grace really is. And so I want to give a couple case studies right now so we can really flesh out what grace is, okay? So think about it like this. First case, imagine that you're a parent and your child comes to you imagine that you are a parent and you ask your child, you say, Timmy, can you pick up your toys? And imagine that Timmy just does not pick up his toys. He will not pick up his toys. You can tell him, Timmy, please pick up your toys. He just does not pick up his toys, all right? He says no all the time. Now, imagine that when supper comes, right, what you do is you call Timmy and you say, Timmy, come for this feast at the table. And Timmy comes and he experiences it and he eats all the food at the table. Let me ask you, is you letting Timmy as a parent eat at that moment grace? And the answer is no. Why not? Well, while Timmy may not be deserving of the supper because he just rebels time and time again, you as a parent are nonetheless, as his parent, obligated not to let him go starving, right? So he doesn't deserve it, but you're obliged to give it to him. It's not grace. Or how about this? You're part of a high school sports team, and at the end of the season, your coach, who's been the coach of the team for like a century, decides that he's going to step down. And so what you as a team do is you gather all together and you want to throw a party for this coach and give him this little award for being such an awesome coach over all these years. Now, let me ask you, is that grace? No. Why not? Well, while you as a players, you're under no obligation to throw a party for him, right? But the reverse, this coach is very much deserving of it. He's deserving of having a party thrown. He's done these things for all of these years. So it's either I'm not deserving, or I am deserving, or I'm not obliged, or I am obliged, right? And then finally, so what is grace? Think about it like this. Imagine that you have an absolutely lousy neighbor. Like every night, your neighbor pounds music incredibly loud, and every time you ask them to turn it down, they turn it up, right? And then one time when you play your music just for doing supper, all of a sudden your neighbor goes out and he calls the cops to come to your house because he's so annoyed by it. But then imagine that your neighbor gets sick, and what you do is you start running errands for that neighbor. You start making meals for that neighbor. You clean your neighbor's house. You pour yourself out for that neighbor. Is that grace? Yes, it is. Why? It's a grace because while your neighbor is undeserving of your favor, and while you're under no obligation to give it to them, that's grace because regardless of those two things, you pour your favor upon your neighbor. That's what grace is. Grace is free, it's favor, freely given to an undeserving recipient by a non-obligated giver, right? Now, even though we've seen those three aspects of grace, if you have those in your head and you understand that, you still may not be changed by grace, because there's still another element of grace that you have to see, that you have to see to fully get the picture of what grace is. And what's that? Well, it's that grace is given at great cost to the giver. Grace is favor that's freely given to an undeserving recipient by a non-obligated giver at great cost to themselves. For grace to change, you must see that the grace you have and the grace that you've been given, the favor of being let in, cost the giver of it greatly. Grace is always free to the one who receives it, but it's always costly to the one who gives it. Think about it like this. Let me work it out like this. Think about it like this. My heart, one of the things that my heart is attached to more than anything else, more than it should be, is my home stereo, okay? Like, if you stole my car, would I be sad? Yeah, but I'd get over it. Or if you took my guitar and you broke my guitar, would I be disappointed? Yeah, but I'd get over it. However, if you took my stereo and you did something to my stereo, we'd have to shit Shiva in the Klooster household for a bit. There would be a time of mourning and ashes over the head over this great awful event that took place, right? I love my home stereo. Now imagine that Mike Slofter and his wife came over to our house in order to play charades. Imagine that during that game, things got a little intense and Mike was trying to win the game by acting out being Megatron, right, from Transformers. Imagine that while he was doing that, what he did is he kicked over one of my speakers and it fell on the ground and it shattered. Now let me tell you, in that moment, there's a problem, right? There's a big problem. Mike and my relationship has been broken, right? It's broken. We're at odds with one another because there's a real debt that has taken place between us. And here's the thing, the only way that Mike and I are going to be able to reconcile to one another, the only way that I'm going to be able to have favor and let Mike back into my relationship with him, is if somehow that debt gets paid. And that can happen in one of two ways. The first thing I can do is when Mike knocks it over, you know, trying to be Megatron, I could look at him and say, well, eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, Mike. Out of the house right now, you're banished forever and never come back into this house until you have a new speaker in your hand. And when Mike shows up, right, then I can be like, oh, there, the debt's paid. And now I can let you back in. Now I can welcome you. Now I can give my favor upon you. That's one way. But the second way, right, that our relationship could be reconciled and I could pour out my favor on him is if the second that he smashes my speaker, I look at Mike and I say, you know what, Mike, you broke that speaker and there's a real debt that stands between us, but I'm going to offer you grace, Mike. I forgive you, Mike. It's okay, Mike. In other words, I can restore our relationship, show favor on him by taking the burden of that cost on myself. And that's what you got to notice. In both of those cases, there's a real debt that's got to be paid. There's a real debt that's got to be absorbed. And while grace is free to the recipient, it's always costly to the giver. If I just forgive him and pour out grace, I'm taking the cost of that broken speaker on myself. I've lost that speaker. I have to bear the load of that loss, right? And the same is with God. God's favor is free, but it cost him dearly. You and your sin and my sin, we created a debt that stands between us and God. You've robbed God of his glory in your life. You've loved his creation more than you've loved him. And in doing so, you've dishonored his name. You forsook him. By looking to things in this world to say, this is what's going to be satisfying me, you're turning towards God on a daily basis and you're saying to him, and you're not satisfying, you're not great, you're not pleasurable, everything I want is in this thing that you've created, not at all, and you. And we forsake God. But God, you have to see, doesn't forsake us, but he offers us grace. And the way he does that is he has to take on the cost of himself to give us this grace. And you see, what he did is he sent his son Jesus Christ in the world. And on the cross, what happened? Jesus cries out on the cross saying, my God, why have you forsaken me? Showing you that God took that debt that we owed against him upon himself. He took the cost the cost of forsaking him upon himself. He absorbed it himself upon the cross so that we might be let in, so that he might give us his favor. This is why Jonah in Jonah chapter 4 says, "Then I said, I am driven away from your sight. Yet again," Jonah says, "I'm going to look towards your holy temple." He looks towards the temple in the fourth piece of grace because he knows that there he's going to see what it's going to cost God to bring him this favor, what it cost God to bring his life out of the pit. That's going to cost God his own life. And that wraps up what a full-orbed understanding of grace is. Grace is favor given to you. It's God opening the door and letting you into his presence, the very thing that will settle your heart. And he gives it to you who are undeserving of it, right? And he gives it to you even though he's not obligated in the slightest to give it to you. And he gives it to you at great cost to himself on the cross. That's what grace is. And so how then do you receive it? How do you receive grace in such a way that it begins to change your life? The reality is it's by tasting and seeing those various aspects of grace more and more and more. It's by seeing that grace is being let in, by seeing that I'm really undeserving of it, by seeing more and more that God's not obligated to give it to me, by seeing more and more that he's, look at the cost in which he gives. And the more we see those things, the more it drops into our heart and we taste it, and it radically begins to change us. But what that also means then is this. If you've never been changed by grace, why is that? If you haven't been changed by it, why is that? Well, it's because there's something about grace that you're not understanding. There's something about grace that you're not seeing. Maybe it's three things. First, it could be this. It could be you're not being changed by grace because you don't understand that grace is favor. You don't understand that grace is being led into the presence of God. Rather, you're looking at Christianity as if God's supposed to just give you things in the world that you want from him, the life that you want. No. Grace is favor. Grace is letting you into him. God is the goal. God is the goal. His presence is the goal. His presence is what will satisfy. If you're not being changed by grace, you might not see it as favor. Second, if you're not being changed by grace, it might be because you think you deserve it. You might just be sitting there thinking you deserve to have God pour out his favor upon you. And that can happen in two ways. The first way you can deserve is by going around and looking at everybody else and thinking, you know what, I'm a pretty good churchy person. I go to church, I do all my religious things, I read my Bible, I'm better than most people, I deserve God to love me, I deserve God to pour out his grace upon me and give me his favor. That's one way to feel like you deserve it, but the other is to continually look at yourself and be like, my life's harder than everybody else's, my life's terrible. It's to take a victim mentality throughout your life and say, because my life is so bad and so awful and things go so poorly, clearly God owes me his grace. Clearly God owes me to pour out his favor upon me because look at how hard it's been for me. If that's you, you still think you deserve it. You still think you deserve the grace. And as long as you think you deserve it, it will never change you. It will never flip the switch in your life. So that's two things. And then finally, the third reason you might not be changed by grace is because maybe it is in your life that you see yourself and you say, I am unworthy of this. I am unworthy of this. I am unworthy of this. But you have such a low view of God's love that you don't think that he is able to love someone like you. And if that's you, you need to look to the cross to see the cost. Look at the lengths, the height, the breadth, the width that God went to pour out his favor upon you. His love is deeper and wider and longer for you than you could ever believe. Look at what he gave for you at the cross. And so then, how do you know when that grace has been received? How do you know that you're receiving it? Well, what happens, and we'll be quick, is that your life changes. Your life begins to change. You know you've encountered that grace when your life changed. How? Two marks. First, joy in God. Look at Jonah. What does he say? Verse 9, he says, but with voice of thanksgiving, I will sacrifice and I'll do what I have vowed to do. The first mark that Jonah has been changed by grace is that he has joy in God. He loves God. He loves God more than the things that God gives him. His prayers turn from being, Lord, grant me this thing, grant me that thing, grant me this thing, to the one thing I ask, this is all I seek, that I may dwell in your house forever. To be radically changed by grace is to want God above all things, because you've seen and you've tasted how good he is, that he poured his favor upon you, even though he wasn't obliged to, upon you at great cost to himself. And second thing that marks that you're changed by grace is you love sinners. Jonah, right? He wasn't changed by grace. He what does he do? He gets the call from God and he flees. He goes. He serves an idol. He jumps on a ship. He leaves. And then grace comes into his life and it changes him. And what happens to him? We hear in chapter 3, verse 1, it says, then the word of the Lord came to Jonah a second time, saying, arise and go to Nineveh, that great city, and call out against it the message I tell you. So Jonah rose and he went to Nineveh according to the word of the Lord. When grace drops in your life, you love sinners. You love people. You don't look at them with disgust. You don't look at people anymore with disdain, saying, how could you be like that? How could you work like that? You never think that my situation would be better if this person wasn't around. You can't. When you've experienced grace, you can't. Because you know that you are a sinner who was loved, that you are a sinner who was brought in. So you can't look out anymore, and you can't push sinners away. You love sinners, even the worst, like those in Nineveh. That's what grace is. Grace is favor freely given to you, who's undeserving of give it by God, who's not obligated to give it to you, at great cost to himself. And it produces in you love for sinners, joy in God. Grace truly changes everything. And all of God's people said, amen. Let's pray.